Turns out we're bringing Denny's to Austria because Verstappen just got himself a Grand Slam. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. I'm really glad the Americans approved of that intro. I got nods from everybody else on here. I'll take that. I'll take the subtle approval. I hate being the only British guy here these days. I'm Dre Harrison. Welcome to episode 312 of Motorsport 101. That was a newsworthy Austrian Grand Prix, to say the least. And I wouldn't say it was the most riveting race in the world, but there was a lot to take away from it, certainly. And that's kind of what makes this podcast all the more beautiful in that sense. So we'll be talking all about the Austrian Grand Prix, and we'll also be talking a little bit of IndyCar in their last race before their summer vacation at Mid-Ohio, because finally, after almost a month of perspiration, pole positions, and inevitable disappointment, some guy called Joseph returned to the winner's circle. I think that's had a number on one of our show hosts, and clearly, King is going through it. isn't that right, King?
Oh! I'm going through it. I thought it was the person who the Tennessee native.
I didn't know Cam moved.
No. I'm just here, you know, watching Pagenaud not really drive hard enough and finish 13th every weekend. It's
a thing. It's a trip.
Yeah.
But how you doing otherwise, King?
Doing well. Spending my weekday mornings watching La Tour de France and things. Yeah, real good tour. Dude who we thought was gonna retire is somehow the fastest guy in the sprints. Who would have guessed?
All you have to do is just have some really... a spectator who's clearly not thinking straight cause the big one on the first stage. And then after all the dust settles down, eventually we get some pretty intriguing storylines out of Latour.
It's just like being an F1 fan. It's just like, it's a bit of a mess to start off with. We get through and then we all figure everything else out. We'll get there in the end. It's fine. I never actually watched the Tour de France before, and I've actually been watching it as King streams it on our Discord. It's been great. Very much enjoyed it. I am becoming a new cycling fan very, very slowly.
Absolutely.
We are also very blessed with Eurosport's coverage here in the UK, which is very, very good. It's been thumbs up from me all around on that one.
Yeah.
It's been great afternoon
for the watching. Extra incentive to join our Discord community.
Yeah.
Ask anyone of us for an invite.
We totally legally sit in a circle and talk about sports with a video in the background. It just happens. We don't know how we got there. Also joining us, Cam Buckley. Hello, sir.
You know, at the start of the season, before the first race, my fellow podcast co-host called me a madman. They didn't believe me when I saw what I saw, but, you know?
Oh, you... For those that are listening on audio, that's a can of Red Bull that Cam was just broken out from under his...
I desk. Might not sleep for 72 hours!
Why did I have a bad feeling in the back of my head that breaking out the Admiral Akbar meme was a bad idea back in March? I'm not proud of myself right now. And now Cam is the smuggest podcast host of all of us. And I thought I was pretty bad last week. Will you stop drinking Red Bull? Stop it, you heretic. You're not going to sleep for a week.
is that 20-ounce can. Is that 189 milligrams of caffeine?
Ooh. So... While we call an ambulance for Cam, RJ, how's it going up there?
I'm glad Ohio was good. Ohio was good. Me and my partner had a good time in Ohio watching the IndyCar race. We got to watch what you described as the worst Fight Club candidate of the year. We got to watch that in person. Obviously, the IndyCar race was good. thankful to everybody. Stadium Super Trucks delivers. What can I say? But then, and I know we're not going to talk about it like in any of our segments, but I do find it very jarring and weird, and I know I've talked about this a number of times, but like, as international motorsport starts to realize that travel restrictions, COVID vaccination rates are getting too slow for flyaway events in places like Australia and Japan, this episode's probably going to come out right around the time that the Summer Olympics are going to be rammed through under very similar social circumstances. I'm just like, damn, motorsport really doesn't mean shit in the grand scheme of things now, does it?
Yep, not really.
Brother.
We are the nichest of unimportant niches.
Yeah, I wish we were bringing in trillions of dollars worth of revenue that people could stand to lose if these events, which, by the way, according to a recent poll, 80% of the Japanese public is against having the games right here and now.
80%.
This is not a good idea. Granted, we're still going to watch this because we love the shit out of athletics, but, you know, this is not a good commentary. This is not a good look for the IOC, which is an understatement of the year.
History will look upon this very harshly.
Mm-hmm. I hope not, at least.
I hope they do look upon it harshly, so we don't repeat the mistakes in the future. Because that's
indeed ridiculous. It's the IOC. We're guaranteed to get this sometime later on down the decade.
Yeah, like I said, city hope everyone, because I know there's a lot of people flying out there now because the game's starting in a couple of weeks' time. Stay safe out there, folks. Yeah. Do the best you can, because boy, I do not envy anybody out there in that situation over in Tokyo. Because yeah, seeing the Japanese Grand Prix get cancelled and, not cancelled, but we all kind of know.
So MotoGP Grand Prix is cancelled. Both the races on Australia are off the table, and like people are thinking, like, best case scenario, we may not have another international motorsport event there until, at best, 2022, which, quite frankly, sucks.
Because we know Honda is going to do everything in their power to try and make the Japanese Grand Prix happen, whether it's behind closed doors or not, whether that's the right thing to do.
It's not ideal at all, we might not get 23 races in the end in F1. We are certainly not going to get 20 in MotoGP now. It's looking more like 19. We've got two races in Portimao coming instead. See, the Algarve Grand Prix will take that slot over there in November, it's a matter of time before the Japanese F1 race gets cancelled as well. We know what's coming. We've got it on good word from people over there that it's not happening. It's just going to be a matter of when it becomes official. So we'll have to wait and see. Again, as mentioned on the podcast this week, we'll be talking the Austrian Grand Prix. We'll be talking the first career Grand Slam of one Max Verstappen as Red Bull took their fifth Grand Prix win in a row. Oh, man, that sounds like 2013 flashbacks right there, doesn't it? It was a simpler time. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about Lando Norris. We'll be talking a lot about Mercedes and their current situation and half a page's worth of penalties, because there was a lot going on in the second half of that Austrian race that we need to get through, and it was a messy one. We'll also be talking IndyCar in Mid-Ohio and Joseph Newgarden's return to the winner's circle as well. But first, unfortunately, we've got to report some sad news that just came through in the last couple of hours as we're recording this on July 7th. RJ, sadly, we have to remember the tragic news that Carlos Reutemann passed away this afternoon.
Yeah, Carlos Reutemann had been battling some pretty bad health issues within the last month. He had a hemorrhage, which had kept him in the hospital for well over a month. Prior to that, he'd been battling liver cancer back in 2017. I believe it was late last night, early this morning, that he was inducted back into an intensive care unit. And then just a couple hours before we went on the air on July 7th, 2021, we got the news from his daughter, Cora, that Carlos Reutemann has passed away at the age of 79. You'll know him best from racing 11 seasons at F1 from 1972 to 82. Still one of the most successful drivers who never won a world championship. His success in motorsport, he won two podiums of the World Rally Championship in Argentina. Obviously a beloved athlete back home. To this day, he's still the last Argentine driver to win a Formula One Grand Prix, picking up where the likes of Juan Manuel Fangio and Jose Froilan Gonzalez left off. And after 82, when he decided to retire from motorsport, he went into politics. He served two terms as the governor of his home district of Santa Fe, and then once his second term was up, he served in the National Senate from 2003 until his death earlier today. His daughter, Cora Rodeman, confirmed her father's passing on social media, saying that Dad left in peace and dignity after fighting like a champion with a strong and noble heart that accompanied him until the end. I am proud and blessed for the father that I had. I know he will accompany me every day of my life until we meet again in the house of the Lord. As I was going through, Reutemann's career accomplishments, I really truly feel like if you were to have a discussion of the greatest drivers from that era of the 1970s, one of the most romanticized eras of Formula One that we have, because it's right on the bleeding edge of speed and danger and so many larger-than-life figures that the sport had at that time. If you're to talk about the greatest drivers of that era and you make a list of the greatest drivers and it leaves off Carlos Reutemann, that list is incomplete, because he accomplished more than what a lot of world champions were able to accomplish over his 11 years in the sport. Again, he is one of the very best who never won a world championship.
Yeah, 12 wins, 1981 world championship runner-up. One of those years that a lot of people mention 81 and the fact that Reutemann came so close to becoming a world champion. And yeah, one of the F1 greats. Thoughts, condolences, all of Carlos's loved ones. After this, let's get the housekeeping out of the way real quick before we get into the rest of the show. Look at places you can find us. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And we're on Instagram at motorsport101pod. If you want to follow our personal Twitter handles, you can on the screen. If you're not listening via YouTube, you can at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, and at CBuckley917. We've got all our other stuff on the website, motorsport101.com. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of the audio versions of the show. You can upgrade to the $10 level for all the video versions of the show, as well as getting access to the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. So after this quick break, we'll be back to talk the Austrian Grand Prix.
So here we are again in Austria 2 Electric Boogaloo. It was a day of milestones for Red Bull as Max Verstappen achieved his first ever Grand Slam in Formula One, winning from pole position, setting the fastest lap, while leading every lap of the race. It also marked Red Bull's fifth straight victory, the first time they've done that since 2013, and the first time Honda Power has done so in Formula One since that McLaren season in 1988.
You know one.
Mm-hmm. You all know the one. The Mercs, well, they were stuck dealing with Lando Norris, who pumped in a phenomenal lap in qualifying to put his McLaren second. It took Hamilton most of the first stint to clear him, but Hamilton ended up picking up aero damage on the left rear of his car after driving over the curbs at turn 10. Looks like it was wear-related rather than going especially wide. His car was assessed to have lost around 30 points of downforce, worth about 6 to 7 tenths a lap, and he hemorrhaged time and dropped to fourth on the day, behind Valtteri, who ended up finishing second, and Lando, who ended up finishing third, for his third podium of 2021. Max has extended his championship lead to 32 points, the biggest deficit Lewis Hamilton has faced since the 2016 Japanese Grand Prix. Before we get to the winner on the day, holy crap, Lando Norris! P2!
That was...
P3 in the race. And if it weren't for circumstances, which we will talk about a little later on the show, easily would have been second. I don't know if a win was in sight, but Lando Norris, what a season he's had.
They Karen Chanlock on Sky Sports F1 did a great piece where they do their qualifying lap comparison. And if you watch the side-by-side of him and pole sitters Verstappen's laps, Norris was leading at the final corner. He was in front and he lost about a car length through turn 10. And that was pretty much the only reason why Lando wouldn't have had his first career pole position. That was an outrageous, best one I've seen this season. That was a whopper. And then, again, he was able, like, this was the story of the race, or from the front of it anyway, the one that, for me, was the most captivating. Seeing the fact that Lando was able to keep Hamilton behind him for most of the first stint and stay with both Mercedes over the course of the entire race, obviously because Valtteri ended up in front towards the end of the race, but Lando was competitive against the factory Mercedes outfit pretty much the entire race, the entire weekend, if you want to include qualifying as well. It was fantastic, incredibly impressive. The best I've seen Lando Norris drive a car, and he's already had a few good days. And this was the chef's kiss. This was phenomenal as well.
This was everything we expected Lando Norris to be when he inevitably got the call up to Formula One. And I know it took a while because, unlike Charles and unlike Matt and unlike George, he was never immediately in the frame for a top tier drive upon his first or second year in the sport. But boy, he is doing some phenomenal stuff with the McLaren team. Their stock is rising every year. I mean, we were just talking about this last week, where he is clearly the number one driver against a multiple Grand Prix winner who was brought in this offseason. He's the only driver who's been in the points every round.
He already just surpassed his career high points haul for a season after 9 rounds of this year.
And we have as many as 14, but probably as few. We have some number of races left. What can I tell you? The sky is the limit for a minimum
of 11 or 12 left. A minimum.
Yeah. Sky's good.
He has plenty of time to extend that points total. He's driving some of the best in the field.
We've not been quadrupled. This guy's legitimately doing this. Proven as such. Going back to his days in juniors.
Until he ran out of tires, Lewis Hamilton could do nothing with him in a factory Mercedes.
Right.
That should kind of say it all, really. Okay?
It's surreal to see. It's surreal to see the McLaren that high up the order. It doesn't
front row since 2012.
Like, I know the McLaren's fast, but it's not that fast on its own. Like, clearly Lando is getting 110% out of this car.
Certainly feels that way. He got the ultimate endorsement over the radio, where Lewis Hamilton said, as he finally passed him about 20 laps into the race, he said, quote, "Such a great driver, Lando." And there was some Instagram dap between the pair of them as well, saying, quote, "the first of many more to come." And we still joked about it last week. We'll repeat it again, as I put in the chat. He's ahead of Valtteri Bottas in the championship. Still, the 9 round points. He's just taking as good as he can get out of every weekend we're seeing him drive. And that's worth something. It is worth something.
That's it right there. He is maximizing everything. Every opportunity he gets all that's there on the table and more.
Absolutely.
And that's why McLaren is doing so well in the constructors. That's why he just put a McLaren Mercedes, which this team has not been on the front row, I reiterate, since 2012. He put them ahead of the factory Mercs. Mercedes can't insinuate anything about that Honda power unit anymore, now can they? They just got beat by one of their customers.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think segues us nicely into the Mercedes situation. I mean, Hamilton's not been down this bad since that other teammate that he had in Formula One. He's minus 32 as it stands after 9 rounds. We talked a lot last week about the state of play at Mercedes and their seeming winding down of development for the year. This could very well be their final upgrade that's due apparently at Silverstone next weekend.
It is. It's the last one.
It's the last one in the pipeline. Does this feel like a last stand? It feels like it might be their last stand because this is Mercedes land. This is built. Silverstone is built for them. If they don't get this one,
it is built for them. It is their last upgrade on the W12, and indeed, this generation, this extraordinary generation of Formula One cars.
Lewis Hamilton's good here,
and Lewis Hamilton is a certified wrecking machine around this place. Feels like unless they find something absolutely game changing, there is nothing they can do. Max Verstappen got out of DRS range from Lando, rocketed up the road, and even though they pitted Lewis with his damage for a fastest lap, Max then took fastest lap on his dead tires, pulled enough of a gap to come out ahead of Valtteri, pitted again, and then set a 106.2 over a second clear of the field just as a final middle finger to everyone.
We were just talking about how the chance of getting a Grand Slam in a modern formula race now that we have the fastest lap points, it is so much harder now.
Mm-hmm. That's you just have to how be fast. Like, this was... It's gotten beyond the point where Mercedes can do nothing. It's to the point where Max can rocket away at the front and then just... He doesn't have to push.
Yeah.
He can get out of undercut range, manage his tires, and just go on a nice Sunday drive.
Yeah.
As they say, Mercedes claimed that they enjoyed being the hunters. It's not fun when the rabbit's got the gun, is it?
No, it's not. And yeah, it was a very quiet Mercedes garage. The social media team weren't vibing as like they normally do. Like, I mean, we were watching on the Pit Lane channel. How many Max Verstappen radio messages did you hear during that race, apart from when he crossed the line to win?
Like, maybe the pit once. Stop.
Yeah. One, that was it.
Two, like box, 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 you know? Like, they even had the fastest pit stop for the seventh time this season. It was the perfect race.
This is the most perfect performance we've seen from a non-Mercedes team since Ferrari's strong period at the start of first half of 2018.
Yeah,
pretty much.
And this is ridiculous.
Yeah, and none like this year. And please do not take this as slander as anybody who may have been at Ferrari back in 2018. This looks more like a comfortable advantage.
This is way more decisive. The pendulum kind of swung between. Yeah, it swung between Ferrari and Mercedes seemingly every other race. This is decisive now. There's nothing that the Red Bull does that's worse than the Mercedes.
Anyway. If it wasn't Max Verstappen, we'd be saying that Max Verstappen is just being a benefactor of an Adrian Newey car design and a powerful Honda engine.
Well, funny how that works.
Funny that.
Yeah. But, Honda went from being... Honda came into the sport with a spluttering, coughing, dying McLaren.
No, first they came in with the expectation that it was going to be 1988 all over again, and then they came in with a spluttering, coughing mess.
Yeah.
A spluttering, coughing McLaren that finished two laps down, Jenson Button willing it to simply finish. They are pulling pit stops on Mercedes.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Are they sure?
Given the state of play last year. Given that they were DNSing races in 2017.
Yeah. Like, they are stomping the team that won 11 out of 17 Grand Prix last season. Like,
and should have won a lot more.
Yeah. They should have had more than that. Like, Mercedes were back to 2014 levels of dominance last year, and Red Bull's hauled arse. Honda has hauled arse. Verstappen was able to box from the lead, come out in front, and set a fastest lap. That never happens in this series. Even no. Mercs at their best were not doing this on the field. This was a beat them down of colossal proportions. And I was watching that race thinking, we might already be done here after 9 rounds. And yeah. 3 rounds ago, we thought, this could be a fantastic season battle. 3 well, rounds later, we're
four
like...
4 rounds ago.
Yeah.
4 rounds ago, Mercedes looked like they had got the car under control. And,
yeah,
you know, they outplayed them in Spain. They stomped them in Portimao. And yeah. now it swung back so quickly where now Mercedes are despondent in the face of an almost insurmountable challenge. If they don't win in Silverstone,
yeah.
I said they need to win two of the next 3. They won 0 of the next 3 since that required prediction.
Mm.
If they don't win in Silverstone, if they don't club Red Bull in Silverstone, barring reliability, Verstappen could well run the table for the rest.
They're
he could run the table for the rest of the year. We could finish this title 3 or 4 races early. This is nothing they can do.
I was going to say, even if you compare it from a driver's standpoint, Verstappen is way better than he was a year and a half ago. The most he's stepped out of line all season was a couple of track limits excursions. That's about as far as it's gone. Besides that, he's pretty much gotten the most out of this Red Bull this season.
Yeah, you remember early in the season where we thought these track limits excursions were going to ultimately cost him a title? Man, that seems like forever.
Feels a long, long time ago. Like, the only mistake you can really look at this year that is, you know, driver error cost them hard points on the track was probably Max at the end of Bahrain.
Yeah.
Pulling off the move on around the outside.
Yeah.
Every other time he's maximized what's available.
Yeah.
And the time that Mercedes could have got one back on Red Bull, someone fat fingered a button and he went flying off of turn one.
Yeah. And the guy that's
a
the
very
guy that's
small
made,
yeah. a very small error.
Yeah.
As it took all the pressure off of Red Bull.
Yeah. I was gonna say, the one that's cracked more in these high-pressure situations so far has been Hamilton. Something that you would never have guessed a year ago. Like, Hamilton has had to go over the limit to try and keep up, and it's showing. He's looked the one that's looked a lot more vulnerable as the year has gone on. And again, you would never have guessed of that given the Pantheon status we were putting Hamilton in less than a year ago.
That's the biggest change this year with Verstappen. Those of you who are longtime listeners of the show know I have been very critical of Verstappen for being all aggression and vibes for most of his time in the sport, because he was having to get everything that he could out of an inferior car.
See, that's...
Now that he's got the car, he's a completely different person.
Hmm.
And rather than buckling under the pressure, he's thriving under it.
Yeah.
As is Red Bull.
Wild.
It's the opposite of what it's the, if you went into this year, it's the opposite of what everyone would have expected.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, my prediction was Verstappen's gonna buckle somewhere down the line and that's gonna cost him the championship. As it stands right now, I'm not so sure about that.
Mercedes wards are bursting at the seams, and they can't dominate Silverstone. As far as I'm concerned, that's their wards have broken entirely, and the championship will be over.
Yep, 2 races left before the summer break, and Mercedes' backs are well and truly against the wall, unlike anything we've seen in the turbo hybrid era to date, and that is going to be fascinating going forward. It's going to be an incredible British Grand Prix. There will be fans. There's going to be probably about 140,000 on race day, and the majority will be there for Lewis.
Brands Hatch is... Brands Hatch is not happy about it.
If you're not there for Lewis, you might not want to show up.
Yeah. They're going to be winning that boy on hard that weekend while they wave their negative PCR tests in the air because they need him to be there. So, good luck with that. They've literally had to remortgage their houses to be able to afford it. So, good luck with that. And good luck, Mercedes, because this could be your last chance next weekend. King, I wouldn't want to be a race steward this weekend.
No. Wouldn't want to be a race steward. We got a hint of it because we got a hint of it early because Formula 3 races before Formula 1, and there was a slew of track limits penalties given out in the F3 races. It was clear that Michael Massey was going to keep that trend going forward, and in the race, pretty much by the end, two-thirds of the field was under investigation for something that they did during the course of the weekend. Kind of briefly split it up into three parts. The big story qualifying was Sebastian Vettel getting a three-place grid penalty for the race for blocking, for notably blocking Fernando Alonso during his last run in qualifying. And I don't know about you guys, but it really felt like Vettel shouldn't have been the only driver penalized.
I'm glad you said it. I'm glad you said it, King.
Rip that bandage off.
To be the one to lay in front of that bullet. But look, I don't want to say this as a homer, as a Sebastian homer, but if you're going to throw the book at Sebastian for a block, and don't get me wrong, I'm not holding my hands up, it was absolutely a block on Fernando. Not disputing that.
Yeah, he deserved his penalty, he deserved. 100%.
Yeah, no problem. It was a clear block. Slam dunk penalty. Fine. I've got no problem with that. The problem I have is the fact that he was only going slowly because Valtteri Bottas and Carlos Sainz were in front of him in the queue, and they were specifically told by Michael Massey before the weekend started, no dawdling on the turns 9 and 10 before you go back for your hot laps.
And Mercedes even radioed race control to start the session, asking for clarification, and the reply was, yes, we told the drivers in the meeting, you can't go slow between 9 and 10.
And what happened? Bottas and Sainz go slow between 9 and 10 and were cleared of punishment. And what got me was the steward's note where it says, quote, because no driver was wholly to blame, basically because everybody was doing it, we couldn't throw the book at Valtteri and Carlos.
It was Carlos and it was Perez. They were all kind of together on track. How do you come to the conclusion that because all three of you were in violation, none of you get the penalty, while Vettel, who was then put in that situation, gets the penalty because he did end up blocking someone? It's two different rules, and that's fine. But if you amended the rules specifically to deal with the situation, three people breach it, and you just do nothing?
It's like, oh, everything's fine. We're not going to penalize anyone for breaking this rule, but you over there in the corner, you broke this other rule that the only reason you broke it is because everyone broke that first rule we're not penalizing people for.
Why even write the rule then?
I think this is, like, I understand not wanting to rile up the teams and not wanting to make F1 look like a joke by some people's measures, but if you have to penalize everyone, penalize everyone.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Like, if either punish no one or punish everyone, the fact you singled out one guy and then not the other two guys, whether a specific rule that was in the book, I just found that nonsensical. It didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Like, so I had no problem in a vacuum that Vettel got three places because it absolutely was a slam dunk block. I've got no problem with that at all. But he only blocked him because of what was going on in front of him.
Nowhere to go.
One led to the other, as far as I'm concerned.
And there's the gentleman's agreement you can't overtake when
I think that's
up,
I think that gentleman's agreement is completely gone this year. We've heard so many people
dumpster fire.
Unwritten rules of qualifying.
It's like moving on during the race, also between 9 and 10. Giovinazzi got a 5-second penalty for overtaking before the safety car line, and Yuki Tsunoda got two 5-second penalties for crossing the pit entry line.
Just careless from Yuki.
Yeah, just careless.
Same penalty twice in a row.
Stonewall. That's As a football fan to say, that's a Stonewall penalty. And that was it was poor driving from Sonoda. He should know better.
He was having a good weekend up to that point, which is makes it all the more aggravating.
Yeah, and to be fair, he was very honest about it on Twitter. He said he was frustrated with his race, and he said, quote, maybe no schnitzel for me tonight, which I thought was quite funny. At least he acknowledged that, he knew he had a bad day. That one was pretty cut and dry.
Probably the most controversial penalty of the race was Lando Norris receiving a 5-second time penalty, as well as 2 penalty points for running Sergio Perez off the road on the exit of 4. And then later on that race, Perez got 2 separate 5-second penalties for running Leclerc off the road twice. It was
everyone flame suits on.
Yep, it was certainly a wild day for Sergio Perez.
Yeah, I was about to say, this looked bleak for Mercedes. Could you have imagined if Sergio Perez didn't have a shocker this weekend? The pendulum has swung to Perez is the underachieving second driver. Now Valtteri Bottas is holding up Mercedes in the World Constructors' Championship.
It's weird.
Oh, God. Yeah,
where do we even start with this one?
I think we start off with the move that triggered all of this. Sergio Perez deciding, maybe I could stick it around the outside of the McLaren in my Red Bull.
Which, you know, at that corner is a viable move. We saw it last week with roles reversed when it was Norris overtaking Perez at the same corner with the cars swapped. But that involves being left racing room by the person on the inside. And Lando wasn't feeling particularly generous.
No.
Yeah, I've seen claims. I've seen breakdowns. One Scott Mansell has said that he feels that Norris had left Perez enough room. I don't know about that.
He didn't. The reason why I think Lando got the penalty more than breaking the letter of the law, because we have to remember, the 2019 Verstappen amendment means that the letter of the law with this rule means absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
If you want to bash someone off, go right ahead.
It doesn't help.
No. And that's where that's the source of a lot of the inconsistency with this penalty.
But it was pretty consistent today.
Yeah.
It was consistent for one day.
But
the thing is, Lando didn't really hide it all that well.
No.
He could have very easily made the corner and left Perez room and chose not to.
Yeah.
Typically, they'll let you get away with it if you make it look like you're just taking the fast lineup out of the corner and you just so happen to edge someone off the road.
Yeah.
If you just steer someone out there and steer someone into the gravel trap, typically it will end up in a penalty.
I was going to say, go on, I'll do you first.
I get it. Lando Norris was looking like the only thing. If he got knocked off the podium because of this penalty, and we got another Verstappen, Bottas, Hamilton podium out of this, I get it. I get that we want somebody else in the mix for a podium, let alone a race victory and change. I know we all love Lando Norris, but you know, think back a year to this same venue. Think back to how Lando Norris found himself in position to get his first career podium. Remember that? When Lewis Hamilton decided to take out Alexander Albon at that very same corner of the track, that 5-second penalty, which allowed Lando Norris to jump right into position to snatch his first podium?
The difference is that Albon more or less had the move done, and Hamilton just crossed over his line and sent him right into the gravel.
Right.
And that was ruled as a 5-second penalty. I look at it like, if there is more than enough room and you're level going into the corner and you rush the braking zone to try and stay alongside, you're probably pushing your luck.
Yeah.
And the idea that if you don't run someone off the road, that you're just giving them the corner is so silly.
No.
Because if you want hard racing, you don't run them out of road. you give them racing room and try to prevail anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, at first glance, I thought because of the Verstappen amendment, I thought, let that one go. Then I saw Lando's on board, and it's pretty cut and dry that he ran Perez off the road. Lando wasn't slick. You can take the narrower line through turn four to set up the racing line for turn five. If he'd have given Perez a fair shake on the exit of turn four and let him have an even contest to five, he'd have gotten away with that one. But he pretended like Perez's car didn't exist on the outside of that corner. And, yeah, I put that down to Rookie doesn't know the gamesmanship laws just yet. Give him another five years.
If he played that a little more stealthily, he still could have done what he did and not gotten a penalty. He was less obvious about it.
Lando said afterwards, he said, "I didn't put anyone in harm's way. In fact, the opposite, and everything I did safely. Why should I get penalty points for that? Nothing I've done is dangerous. It's stupid, in my opinion. It's not what F1 should be, and I hope that other people would back me up on this opinion." I know this puts him to 10, but he's going to have two of them drop off. He would have to just completely go unhinged in Britain to stand any risk of a race ban. I know it looks bad.
Yeah, because he has the two drop off. I think he has a couple more drop off
before Britain. Yeah.
He has two drop off before Britain, but he'll be on 8 until November. So he's going to be a little bit careful. Yeah, we'll get into the penalty point situation a little bit later, but he for the next 3 days is on 10 points at the moment, penalty point wise, and I think that's just a bit of a petulant "I came out on the wrong side of a call I didn't agree with" sort of quote from Lando more than anything else. Like, you didn't outright drive dangerously. I don't think anyone's going to say that, but at the same time, you knew what you were doing. You admitted it on the radio during the race. Well, quote, "What did Perez expect going around the outside?" It's like, you clearly knew what you were doing on that one.
You gotta be more slick with that. Like, fair shake to Lewis Hamilton. No one plays that game better than him.
Oh, yeah. That's experience right there.
Patented move. And this set up two more penalties for the rest of the race. Because after that happened,
Sergio Perez decided he was going to take it out on the Zoomers. He was going to take it out on Charles, who, remember, last week only got driver of the day because he decided to use Pierre Gasly like an inside curb.
Great drive from Gasly, as a side note. However, making a habit of that. Perez is guilty of the same thing for me with the second one. He just clearly steered out there and shoved Charles right off the road.
That was a chop block.
That was a shove.
Like, those, like, the Perez's two, especially given what we'd seen with Lando half an hour earlier, those two were clear cut. Those were
I would say the first one that Perez did on Charles, absolutely slam dunk. The second one, I have no idea what Charles was thinking. I don't think anyone's ever made that move around that corner. It's different when you've got racing room. Charles was always going to the gravel on that second move.
Which is why Perez should have given him room, because Perez would have beaten him out the corner anyway.
He would have had the line.
It was a completely unnecessary block, and that's what got him the penalty. He did not have to defend so vigorously from a move that probably wasn't going to stick. Perez misjudged it. And, those two almost came to blows in Parc Fermé after the race. Like, Charles went to the Red Bull and exchanged some words on that one after Perez cut him off not once but twice in that one.
I think
I've had enough from you Red Bull drivers at this fucking track.
I think Perez is suffering still a little bit from the mentality of the midfield of trying to get all you can early on, when I think even in that first incident with Lando, he could have waited, used the superior pace of the car and secured a 1-2. I think he's still getting used to being in what is, in reality right now, the best car in F1 in that respect. He's got to tune that out a little bit the next couple races.
Full penalty points in the day.
Now, I do have to mention the final incident of the day, between Kimi Räikkönen and Sebastian Vettel that netted Räikkönen a 20-second time penalty and 2 penalty points.
Where's my mallet?
Classic Kimi!
Like, it's hard to say exit of 4 because it was well past the exit of 4.
It was halfway down to 5.
It was in the curve down to 5. George Russell, who, as a side note, we didn't put it in the set list, but
brilliant.
He gave it everything. Q3 in a Williams.
Q3.
On mediums.
So now Fernando Alonso has the ability to overtake a Williams in the clutch time late in a race when it really matters. Now he can overtake a Williams when it really matters, when the chips are down.
Right.
RJ is not mad about this whatsoever. George Russell put in the drive of his life, ultimately lost out to Alonso in a faster car. Fantastic defense while he could defend. He locks up on completely dead tires in front of Kimi Räikkönen. Mm-hmm. This gives Sebastian Vettel, on a terrible, no good, and very bad day for Aston Martin, the run on the inside of Kimi. He holds his line, and Kimi just kind of drove right into his left rear, causing an airplane crash that took Vettel out of the race. Kimi limped home with damage.
Yeah, and
ultimately, through all the penalties, gained position.
Yep, somehow gained position because... Yeah, just to briefly go through it, when Nikita Mazepin and Nicholas Latifi were given 30-second time penalties because they didn't slow down enough to acknowledge the double wave yellows caused by said incident between Vettel and Räikkönen.
Mm-hmm. Oh no!
Räikkönen only got a 20-second time penalty for his incident. I think that was Michael Massey saying that was a drive through, and the Latifi and Mazepin was effectively a 10-second stop and go, essentially, for what, obviously, because it was the final lap. They've got time to unlock those penalties. So yeah, they converted him into time. That's how it turned out. It actually bumped Räikkönen up from 16th to 15th because of the 10-second difference. Way to go, guys! Also, I've only just come back into the country after being in the Alfa Romeo garage because these hands were rated E for everyone. I was pissed, to say the least, on that one. Like, I was more pissed than Sebastian was. He was just like, guess he didn't see me.
I loved Seb's quotes. Like, I don't think either of us intended that to happen.
That was the most diplomatic airplane crash response I have ever heard in my 20 years of F1. It was like, shit happens, huh? Yeah, guess it does. And that was the end of it. Those two.
Neither of them were playing for anything. It was just outside the points. Alonso rocketed up the road after he passed Russell. That's not so good for the cost cap, guys. No. You don't want to be wiping out cars when you don't have a lot of money to play with anyway.
Not ideal. But there was a lot of talk about this and the penalty point system as a result of it, because Räikkönen got 2 for that Vettel incident on the last lap. Mazepin and Latifi got 3 each for ignoring the double wave, the yellows. Perez got 2x2 for his 2. Yuki got 2x1. You get the gist. There was a lot of points dished out, and Norris was one of the first guys to really come at the sport for complaining about the penalty point system. Ironic, given that he's currently on 10 at the time of this recording. I'm sure that's got nothing to do with it, and, you know, the prospect of a potential race ban looms large. I mean, the way we look at it, though, gentlemen, are the way these points distributed fair? Like, is it something that needs to be worked on? Because I'm not sure, given the scale of punishment we give out in F1, that a 5-second time penalty can also carry 2 penalty points. Like, I'm not... It's a weird one.
The thing is that, for the most part, it's not that consequential in terms of things. Mm. Like, it's mainly an off-track deterrent. Do you want it to be
no penalty points and like a 10-second time penalty. I rather it be this way, where it's something that doesn't directly affect the outcome of the race, but it's something the drivers have to keep mind of, because if they keep doing this, there is the high chance that they will miss out on competing in a race.
I tend to agree with King. Perhaps a little bit of context in a given incident might be useful, but I think this, I feel like it being, for once, the FIA actually being clear-cut and consistent on what gets handed out is probably a better thing. It's probably better than doing it a different way where maybe it's graded on a curve a little bit.
Yeah.
Because then you get the potential for the inconsistencies that defined entire sections of this podcast for months with track limits.
No idea what you mean. It's not like I didn't write those scripts or anything.
There's no nuance anyway. Allowed. Derek Warwick, who is clearly a bum that's never done anything in his life, wants to ruin everybody's fun for everybody else. Michael Massey can do nothing right as a race steward. Yeah, it's easier if we just think it in those strokes.
Yeah,
people react in very volatile ways to this, depending on who gets involved. Because
yeah,
Lando is very, very popular.
Extremely.
We happen to like him a lot on the show.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, we're also willing to like say the like
call him out when like maybe you're doing something wrong. And there is a lot of fans who are very active on every outlet on Sunday, calling the FIA biased, rigged, etc.
Ignoring the fact that Lando's had multiple incidents where he's ignored basic safety rules, which has led to heavy amounts of penalty points being dished his way.
Yeah, and like just looking at the list of penalties and penalty points given out in the past race, it's clear to see the line of thinking from the FIA here, where the amount of penalty points you get from an incident is based on how much you put someone else in danger.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is the right way to do it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, looking at it, like, we saw one for a blocking qualifying, we saw one for crossing the pit entry line. Those are not really issues that are going to hurt anybody. Not really. No. We got two for the more driver-based incidents on causing the collision, like with Perez and Norris and Giovinazzi crossing before the safety car line, and of course the Raikkonen incident. Yeah, and we got three at once for Mazepin and Latifi for ignoring a double wave the yellow. And let's not forget, kids, double wave the yellows. Part of the coding for that is slow down and be prepared to stop.
Yeah, because it means that it's pretty much expected that there's a marshal. Like, not on track, but there's a marshal in an area of the circuit where you could potentially strike them.
Yeah, or a vehicle example, or other example. Yeah, quite right. And they got three for that. So it's clear they are gauging the penalty point distribution based on safety, and I haven't got a problem with that at all. And I've described to people the penalty point system in the same way that professional Hearthstone players talk about using health as a resource. The only one that really matters is your last one. And when it comes to penalty points, the only one that really matters is your 12th. The other 11 don't mean anything. In the same way that, you might remember, MotoGP had a very similar system not too long ago. And the way they treated that was a mess, where they didn't quite know what they were doing, and so much so it eventually got scrapped. Where, you know, a guy got punted off a motorcycle and only got three of them, when four of them was a back of the grid penalty.
Judgment to keep in mind, I think. Go ahead. Something else to keep in mind as well. Has anyone in Formula One actually been? Have they actually received a race ban due to the system?
Not since this system's been in place.
Because we know about the one about 9 years ago due to a certain turn one incident. The only driver I can think of that has received a race ban, didn't necessarily serve, was the laughingstock of Formula 2, Mahavir Raghunathan.
Yeah.
Who was racking up so many penalty points, it was he received all of those in the space of one season.
Yeah.
So if it takes driving that badly within one season, that dangerously, to get an actual race ban, I'd say the penalty points are balanced pretty well in that there is a deterrent, but you have plenty of time to clean up your act.
Not even Haas number 9 drives that bad.
Nice. Nowhere near.
And that'll be the nicest thing I say about the show about him for the next couple of weeks or so.
Yeah. I think Mazepin has 5 right now. So I know it's easier to make jokes about how bad a driver he is, but, like, you know. And look, I come from the camp of a driver that got 5 in a single day back in Bahrain, so I know what it's like.
Oh, God.
But I'll say for free, like, the only one that matters is your 12th. And it's over a calendar year. So, yeah, as Cam alludes to, the average is 2 per incident. It means you're probably going to have to break a major rule 6 times over the course of a calendar year to get a race ban. If you're driving
You probably should get at least a race ban.
Yeah.
Probably.
You're breaking that many major rules.
Though, yeah, I don't think it's a problem.
Though, Dre, I think we need to move on to talk about another series where people were driven off the road.
Really? Where?
Stadium Super Trucks!
We're not doing that.
Amazingly enough, they are so tiny. The trucks are so tiny in person. I thought they'd be like the size of monster trucks. No, they're like the size of like 90s Ford Rangers in person. They're so tiny.
So, besides the Stadium Super Trucks, we also had an IndyCar race in Mid-Ohio this past weekend. And, well, it shouldn't be such a surprise to say that a Penske has won a race in IndyCar, but here we are, over halfway through the season, but after 3 straight pole positions and a mountain full of hard luck, Joseph Newgarden back in victory lane with a dominant victory in Ohio, taking 73 of the 80 laps led in the process, led pretty much from lights to flag out sliders and pit stops. He had a bit of difficulty. Marcus Ericsson ran him pretty damn close all the way to the flag in the end. Some very aggressive use of push to pass and some extra fuel being saved allowed Marcus to have a real crack at it. Just ran out of laps at the end of the Grand Prix on that one. But yeah, another very strong weekend for Chip Ganassi. Their cars 2, 3, and 4 over the line in that one, with Pelot third and Scott Dixon in 4th. We'll also talk briefly in a little bit about another major highlight, and that was Scott Dixon and Will Power beating 7 bells off each other on a restart, and Power being spun out at the top of the hill, and some early caution carnage, Power not surviving that spin after colliding with Ed Jones in a puff of smoke. That wasn't ideal at all. But first of all, it's only fair we go to our race fans, IndyCar correspondents, Mr. RJ O'Connell. How was Mid-Ohio, my man?
The way I would describe Mid-Ohio is like, imagine if Barber Motorsports Park was built 50 years earlier. It's a similar vibe. It's still oppressively hot in the middle of the summer, at least. Now, being in the media center was good. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Arnie. Everyone in media. IndyCar Series Media. Thank you, Chris, for being hospitable enough to get me into Honda Racing's hospitality section for Saturday morning so I could watch the combination IndyCar final practice and Formula One qualifying while stuffing my face full of bacon and eggs.
Lovely.
Nothing wrong with that.
It was a good time. I really enjoyed it. It's good being back at the track for the first time in what seems like 10,000 years. I would recommend it. And as to the follow-up question of whether or not I think Joseph Newgarden's form is sustainable, well, he's done this before last season, because he was more than 100 points out with 7 races to go last season, and then he almost came back to win it. It's 6 races left. He's only 64 points out of the championship. He's got to start stringing together more wins if he's going to make another championship comeback, but I do think, given even if his results didn't show at Detroit 2 or at Road America the way he's been driving, it wouldn't surprise me if he at least finishes runner-up in the championship once again.
Look, this is... if we take purely the driving on the side of things, Joseph Newgarden has been absolutely ridiculous for about a month straight.
Yeah.
He is so much faster than everyone else, and only purely by reliability and circumstance is he not on a massive win streak running towards Pillow at the top of the standings. Pillow, who ended up extending his championship gap. Pato, not a great weekend from him.
Yeah.
Joseph Newgarden.
Pato did great damage mitigation after qualifying back at 20th, like you said, after qualifying. You know, it sucks to qualify this slow, because he pretty much botched the last corner of his last turn before, like, his flying lap, and that pretty much just ruined the rest of his lap. He did phenomenally to charge up through the field and finish in the top 10, all things considered. Yeah. But Pillow was
good drive given the circumstances.
Pillow's pit work at the end got him ahead of Scott Dixon, and that was huge on final stage.
Excellent stuff.
And even when Scott Dixon is out here being Scott Dixon, Pillow is matching him every step of the way.
At Mid-Ohio.
At Mid-Ohio!
At Scott Dixon, it may say that he's from Wellington, New Zealand on his bio card. But Scott Dixon is the mayor of Lexington, Ohio.
I just go back to qualifying and watching every session where seemingly every time someone went to the top, Newgarden clubbed the field down by about another 0.3.
Yeah.
He just kept if he can keep this up and his car holds together, it's going to be a grandstand finish in the title.
Couple of notes again here as well. 50th anniversary of Penske's first IndyCar win. Good victory. And Joseph Newgarden has overtaken Ryan Hunter-Reay as the most successful, and I know people are going to bitch and moan that winningest is not a word, but the winningest American driver that's still active with his 19th victory.
And I'll have you know, winningest is most certainly a word.
Hey.
We'll take it. Well, thanks to King in Dictionary Corner.
given the drivers who are in the field, that is mightily impressive.
Yeah. 19 wins for Joseph. Like, it's terrifying that I knew of Ryan Hunter-Reay before I was an IndyCar fan, and in the time I've been watching, Newgarden's overtaken him for wins. That's quite a startling statistic. But no, I can only back up what Cam was saying. He's been phenomenal since the Indy 500. Ever since that race, and even then, he was the best of the Penske's, apart from Pagano. But, you know, Newgarden was able to bring home a solid result in the end, given that they were nowhere throughout most of the month of May. Ever since, Newgarden's been on fire. He's been phenomenal since then, and he's looked virtually impervious outside of all the mitigating factors outside of his control. But that's the beauty and the curse of motorsport, unfortunately. But, no, he's been sensational. And again, this was the weekend where it all just came together. He narrowly beat Marcus Ericsson over the line. He beat Colton Herter in qualifying by 0.003ths of a second. It was
those two in qualifying were miles away. Like, Colton, it's aggravating watching Colton because he is...
It was not a good race day for Colton Herter because he had fuel flow issues on both of his stops. And then he had to stop for emergency service on the last lap, which dropped him out of the top 10. He went from second, and the only guy who could live with Joseph's pace all day, to dropping outside the top 10 in the last lap.
He would have, given that Newgarden had to back off a bit near the end, he should have been in contention for that win.
Indeed. And yeah, Colton, again, phenomenal job. Just wasn't his day today out there. And yeah, Joseph looking impervious to anything other than challenging for victories at the moment. And we have to give another mention to Marcus Ericsson. We did our 3-1 in Detroit earlier in the season. Would you believe it if I told, if you didn't know IndyCar, or vaguely knew IndyCar, that Marcus Ericsson was fifth in the championship right now? Fifth?
First. I must say, he and Grosjean hit each other in practice.
Say the line, Gary Gannon!
It's
I think
fault.
Ericsson hit us.
Look,
honestly, through all the excellence at the top of the championship, through the young stars coming good, I think Marcus Ericsson might be my standout breakout driver of the year, because he's been here for a long time.
Marcus
Ericsson. This year, he's taken a huge step this year.
I said this when I wrote my feature for Race Fans, that Marcus Ericsson no longer looks like the Mendoza Lion of F1, which is what he was throughout his entire F1 career. He's now looking like the kid that was winning 2 single-seater titles in his first 3 years in car racing. He's looking like the guy that Indy 500 winner Kenny Breck said, this dude is the future.
He outperformed Alex Palou, who's leading the championship, and Scott Dixon, who, let's not forget, is Scott Dixon.
Yeah.
In the same team.
Yeah. He was the lead Chip Ganassi car, and it doesn't feel all that freaky to say that. The only reason we're not talking about it more is because the way the championship's gone, it's two of the leading contenders from start to finish have been his two teammates. Again, tip of the hat to Chip, because he's done an incredible job this season with his fleet of cars. I mean, second, third, fourth today. I mean, I think they're third, fourth, and fifth in the championship right now as well, which is just, third, and fifth in the championship right now as well, which is incredible.
It's bad that I have to say this, but props to Jimmy Johnson. Genuinely props to him. Ran a clean weekend, I think, for the first time since he's been here.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan Norman as well. One off IndyCar debut. Ran a clean race as well. Can't fault that. Look, it's been a while since Ganassi has had this many cars that look like they want to win a championship.
This is the first time since Dario was
forced into retirement. Yeah.
Since the days of Dario and Dixon. They had more than one truly competitive car in the championship fight.
Yeah, it's a hell of a step forward. And look, I have to say as well, it's amazing. Like I said, as RJ alluded to, in F1, he was a punching bag. He was an easy joke. He became a meme at one point. The Mendoza line was a great analogy because he was just seen as another Swedish rich kid that was just there to take a seat for someone more talented beneath him.
Like Felix Rosenqvist.
Yeah,
He's the guy who Andre Lauder walked into Caterham for a cup of coffee and outqualified him by the better part of a second with 1 weekend in the car.
It's a different Marcus Ericsson. Now. I think he's in a genuinely competitive situation. He had a rough first season,
he had a rough couple of seasons. I think this year is not the same Ericsson. He's taken a very. I think that win in Detroit gave him a huge boost of confidence.
He's finished in the top 10 at every road course race. Like, the only times he's finished outside of the top 10, both races in Texas and the 500, where he still got in the fast 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a fluke. He's just had a great season. There's no other way of shaping it. He's just been great this year. He's been consistent. He's had a couple of really big results, which is the minimum of what you need in IndyCar, really. A big result means that much more in a field that competitive. And he's had two of them this year already. And the way he's driving, the way that Chip Ganassi is managing this team, it wouldn't surprise you if there was another one between now and the end of the year. They're doing an incredible job. And let Marcus Ericsson's success be proof that Formula One and their success there should not and should never be the be-all and end-all to how we associate and judge talent. Because you would never have guessed 3 years or 4 years ago when he was in Formula One racing for Sauber that he could go over to IndyCar and genuinely climb his way up the ranks and be a success. You'd have been laughed out of them. You'd have thought, who cares about this kid? Bring Charles Leclerc in already. No, like it's you would never have guessed that. But well done to Marcus and props to him because, there's no reason why you can't carve a name for yourself out in another series and make it work for you. And that's exactly what he's done. And more props to him for that. I'm glad that F1 is not being judged as the be all and end all anymore.
He's put in an enormous amount of hard work to get to improve himself to get to this point.
Yeah.
It's great to see because, by all accounts, he's a good dude.
Yeah, good dude, good driver, all-round likable guy, very humble as well, which is great to see as well. And yeah, like I said, just an all-round solid race car driver, which is what he probably should have always been. But unfortunately, the way F1 is, you looked at a very narrow lens and sometimes nuance is lost amongst people in that sport. Ask Alex Rossi, they'll tell you all about that.
Alex Rossi, who would kill for a podium right about now. When you're he would, when a top he would five
run over
finish,
his own grandma for a top five.
When a top five a finish is the best thing you can get out of an Andretti car that isn't being driven by Colton Herta.
Mm.
Why?
Andretti are a hot mess.
Oh, man. RHR and Hinchcliffe getting into each other in the first corner!
Sums up his season,
it's
really.
It's the first I've actually heard of it, that there are major rumors swirling that Hinch has been driving with a pretty severe left leg injury and kind of coping with it through the year.
Was that the leg that got hurt in 2015?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I know that there is the right people are saying, yeah, he's competing injured, and I hope things get better soon.
Yeah, because I don't want this to be the last memory of James Hinchcliffe in an Indy
500.
pole sitter for the Indy 500, race winner, all around, you know, spokesman for the sport.
Fantastic ambassador for the series.
Yeah, I don't want to see this trajectory keep going the way it is.
Yeah, no kidding.
On the subject of veterans on a bad trajectory, what was Willpower thinking trying to kick up the tires over the crest of a blind curve?
I don't know. He must have thought he was going to get the car pointed in the right direction a lot faster.
He got a pioneer. He's driving it into a black hole. Driving it right into Ed Jones' light sight. That's silly.
Yeah, I still have no idea how Pagano got through the fucking the cloud of smoke that got triggered. This was clumsy.
Yeah.
It was.
This was. Now, disclaimer, I really, really didn't like Dixon's, four weaves on the straight leading up to this.
Very naughty.
Weaving in reaction. Mm-hmm. The letter of the law, maybe, but yeah, the two of them showed absolutely no respect to each other, being Dixon and Power. Dixon hoodwinked and bamboozled and led astray Will Power twice in the space of three corners, and it just feels like Power desperation lunged and spun himself out of the race.
Yeah, he bounced off the curb and it was game over.
It's a good thing you signed that contract extension early, folks.
Yeah, he dived into a corner he was never going to make. Like, Dixon had every right to shut the door on him at that point in time, and yeah, it was such a missed. You don't expect that from someone of Will Power's ilk at all. Like, you know, we all know he's an incredible race car driver. You know, high up there in poles and wins all time in the United States. He's an incredible driver.
He's one of the greatest American open wheel drivers we've ever seen.
Yeah, and yet he's having a wretched season by his standards. Like, just some of it is luck, some of it is just OTT driving, and this was a case of really OTT driving. It's the old phrase, you can't win a race on lap one, but you sure as hell can lose it on lap one.
I'm gonna put this into perspective. He's only 11 points ahead of rookie Scott McLaughlin.
Christ.
Scott McLaughlin is, you know, he's having a good first season, given Penske's inconsistency this year.
And given that Willpower, he's coming from tin tops to drive Indy Willpower, cars.
Series champion. Indianapolis 500 champion.
He's going to break Mario Andretti's pole record.
At some point, maybe. But it feels like when Will's back against the wall, he tends to desperation drive. And like, he was quick enough throughout the weekend. He didn't need to just gung-ho into that corner.
Yeah. What you're seeing are, like, the flashes.
It looked like a rookie error.
It looks like the flashes of when Will Power was always the guy that couldn't close the deal on a championship because he was always folding in the last race. No. 2012 was an especially cruel reminder of that when he had the Fontana race in the bag and then he just wrecked it on his own.
Yeah, Willpower is better than what he displayed in that move, and I expect better from a driver who we know is capable of extraordinary things behind the wheel of an Indy car.
Oh, yeah,
that is not good enough from him.
Yeah, and he'll know that.
Dixon was right. Yeah, Dixon was right to slam the door on him. Yeah, he was never going to make that move work.
Yeah. Also, IndyCar, get it together with the consistency on these pens, because that was a blatant block on the straight from Dixon.
It wasn't. They ruled it wasn't reactive. It was proactive.
He moved four times going down the straight.
There is no rule like that in IndyCar. You can move as many times as you want.
Indeed. Mm. Yeah, awful. It's not a great look on the hard camera, but I guess we're all just filthy F1 fans. It's meant to tell you, you're out one block. IndyCar, weave, damn it! Even in MotoGP, you can only move once. Like, we saw it with Joanne Mir when he was in Moto3, like an episode of Ski Sunday. It's crazy. Yeah. IndyCar are now on vacation. They're on their mini break. They don't race in the month of July. They'll be back first weekend in August at some guy's home state somewhere in Nashville, apparently. That should be fun. Right, RJ? Ooh, is he disappeared there?
I think he has.
I think he did put a thunderstorm emoji warning in about 10 minutes ago. That might have been what caused it.
Just finish the show.
I was going to say, the thunderstorms dodged me.
Yeah, somehow. We'll wrap it up real quick in the meantime. So, like I said, IndyCar out for the month of July. They'll be back, I think, on August 8th at Nashville on that one. Formula One will be back in a week and a half's time at Silverstone for the British Grand Prix on that one. So, fellas, we've got a week off, kind of. Isn't that strange after all this condensed motorsport over the last...
You might be, but... Hey, Zach.
Yeah. You survived thunderstorms.
wait. Hey! Oh!
Yeah. Can you hear us? Are we good?
Yeah, I'm good. I can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah. Did I just hear thunder over your microphone?
Yes.
We're bringing the ambience.
The storm of a lack of motorsports.
The gods are moving the furniture.
Indeed. We'll be all right. But we actually have a week off next week. Kind of, sort of.
Well, you guys might get one, but there's a little race in New York that you might catch a couple of us at.
I did forget about this. Yes. Formula E is in New York City this weekend, and a certain someone's in attendance. Two of us will be in attendance for that one. Sadly, it's not me.
We'll sadly be on two opposite sides of a bubble.
King gets the credentials. He gets to be in his own bubble.
Media bubble.
Yeah, you had a schedule clear already, so that way when formally announced with 72 hours to go before the race weekend, that you could actually buy tickets, so that way you and your partner don't already plans to go to the beach of Rhode Island.
Buy tickets? Well, thankfully the tickets, which are already gone, went up for the low, low price of free.
Nothing.
So... I guess I got to figure out how to get to New York and get my first slice of New York pizza.
I am incredibly jealous of the fact you get to try many a New York slice over there. Gentlemen, have a good one. I'm sure it'll be a great time. I am extremely jealous of that. I love the fact that there is a media bubble, so Cam stuck with the plebs. King gets the media center treatments.
I gotta leave to get food. It's a hard life.
Oh, yes. I remember King mentioned earlier. There's no catering.
Poor King. Poor King. But the good thing is the grandstand is right. Apparently, it's right across from the stewarding center. So if Porsche gets disqualified from another race, they know where a certain slice of Sbarro pizza came from. On their window.
We only throw poor
Sbarro pizza.
Yeah, we only throw bad pizza.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Don't waste good pizza.
But we'll be back next week to talk Formula E in New York City. Hopefully, it'll be a fun one. We'll talk pizza. We'll talk electric motorsport, and hopefully, no one gets disqualified this time. But maybe we've had a few of those in Formula E this year, as it is. But places you can find us real quick. before we get out of here, on youtube.com/motorsport101, or on facebook.com/motorsport101, or on Twitter at motorsport_101, handles at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, at SteveBuckley917, and at RJ O'Connell. We're on Instagram at motorsport101pod, website motorsport101.com, and you can back us financially on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. All the perks are on there, as per always. Until next week, I've been Andre Harrison, they've been Ryan Eric King, Cam Buckley, and RJ O'Connell. And I just say, at the time of recording, Harry Kane has just scored to put England 2-1 up in the European semi-final in extra time. It's coming home! It is coming home!
And here I was thinking I'd be the most smug person on the podcast.
Thanks for watching. Sayonara.
Bye, King.
Thanks for coming, King.
This man just opened a code and screamed into it. That is a vibe.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's art right there. Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, way to go, King. Way to go.
I'm going through it.
Raheem Sterling causing the rest of the planet to hate England even more. Love that.
Yes.